January is important in setting the tone for a new year. In 2021, that has never been more true. Our good friends at CBDMD are here to give you the support you need to conquer your New Year's resolution. Make this year one of your best. CBD Relieve with lidocaine fuses CBDMD's hybrid broad-spectrum formula with fast-acting lidocaine to help provide temporary relief for minor aches and pains. And with the new bag-on-valve spray technology, Relieve can be applied comfortably at any angle, even upside down. So, make it easier. We're going to give you 20% off on your next order using the promo code NBA. Once again, that's CBDMD.com. CBDMD.com. Promo code NBA. 20% off of superior CBD products from CBDMD.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is a Thursday edition of Locked On NBA, and boy, do we have things to talk about, and boy, are we glad to have Washington Post national columnist Ben Golliver with us. I'm David Locke. Hope everyone's doing great. Ben Golliver, you've talked about this for a long, long time. We got to go find the first time you predicted it. You've got your James Harden and Kevin Durant back together.
Well, hey, look, it's good for me. Broken clock is right twice a day. I think it's good for the NBA, Locke. I mean, this has been kind of a tough week for the league. I think it's been a somewhat uneven first couple of weeks for this season. Games being postponed, positive tests, maybe teams not quite clicking yet. I feel a real jolt of energy today, you know, just listening to fans talk about the James Harden trade from all angles. I think it's good for Houston to be able to kind of move on and get on with their next chapter. It was very clearly not working there. And I think it's fascinating Brooklyn's willingness to bet big on, you know, star power potential with Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving, and also, you know, kind of closing their eyes and crossing their fingers and praying that the personalities are going to work out. I think it's going to be a fascinating soap opera. I think it has a really high ceiling on the basketball court, and I just think it's kind of what we needed, don't you think?
Well, it certainly adds intrigue and gives you another must-watch team, and as much as people got sick and tired of the Cavaliers and the Warriors, ratings showed that people liked it when the Cavaliers and Warriors played year in and year out. So having superpowers is good, and Milwaukee is not a superpower that moves the meter. The other superpower looked awfully good in Oklahoma City today and is absolutely rolling in the Lakers. So having superpowers in the NBA is probably a really good thing. Is Brooklyn unquestionably your favorite in the West, in the Eastern Conference now?
I'm not ready to go that far, but I think they definitely raised their ceiling. The most important thing about this trade to me is that we don't really know the status of Kyrie Irving right now. I mean, he's been away from the team. When he's been on the court, he's been phenomenal, but he hasn't been there every single night. And to me, if they don't have Kyrie on the court as a reliable piece night in, night out, that wasn't going to be a championship contending team. As well as Kevin Durant has played, as deep as that team went, without Kyrie Irving as a locked in number two guy every night, I still had my doubts there. And that's why they're sitting there at 6-6, dealing with some adversity to start this season. Now you have a very reliable producer in James Harden. Look, we all know he's been on his absolute worst behavior for the last, 2 months, Locke, but he's a guy who's going to be healthy on the court. He'll work himself into shape. He's going to average, close to 30 points like he always does. He has the pre-existing relationship with Kevin Durant. And you've got now, if Kyrie Irving comes back, you've got three of the greatest shot creators and shot makers in NBA history on the same team. So it's going to be super potent. They're going to run bad teams off the court, and they're going to be in the mix. Now, does that mean they're absolutely a cut above a team like Milwaukee that has a pretty established core group that's played well this season and has had a super, super efficient offense themselves? I'm not willing to go there so far. Boston's been more impressive lately, and you can throw a few other teams into that mix in the Eastern Conference. So they're right there. I think they definitely got better, but I'm not ready to crown them completely quite yet.
Am I crazy that giving up Jared Allen actually matters?
Oh, no, not at all. It does matter for sure, because they were already stretched for depth there. And DeAndre Jordan was significantly worse last year and this year compared to Jared Allen. So there are some footnotes here. I mean, Caris LeVert was giving them some pretty good minutes too. And of course, they lost Spencer Dinwiddie to the injury that could probably be season ending, the ACL injury for him. So their depth has taken a hit in multiple different ways. But I think that the nice piece about having Harden as a stabilizing addition he's carried some, you know, weak supporting cast over the course of his career. You know, he hasn't played with as good of a player as Kevin Durant since he played with Kevin Durant. And you could argue that this version of Kevin Durant is significantly better, more experienced, more confident, and all those things than the younger version was. And so I think the cumulative power of those guys is going to carry them through a lot of games. But, you know, ultimately their defense and rebounding have been weak spots this season. And those do take a hit without Allen. They're going to have to play a lot of small ball, or they're going to have to go out and find a big guy to plug into the rotation and to supplement DeAndre Jordan.
So how do you play the three of them together? I mean, you have Steve Nash, the head coach. You have Mike D'Antoni as the assistant. I mean, you have the greatest shot creators in the game, but are you playing your turn, then your turn, then your turn? Are you trying to move it? Are you just trying to play fast? What do you do? Are you spreading the floor and playing Jeff Green as your center because no one can guard any of these guys one-on-one? Like, how do you play with these guys?
Well, I think, first of all, the biggest loser of almost this entire trade to me, other than Tillman Fertitta, who's overseen just, you know, 3 years of the Rockets collapsing, you know, all around him, the biggest loser to me is Kyrie Irving. I think he's going to be the guy who has to sacrifice the most here. He's the guy who wants to dance when the defense is load up on Kevin Durant. And I think he is very clearly, in my opinion, the third fiddle on this group right now. And so I think he's going to have to sacrifice his minutes. He's probably going to get more time, you know, with second unit guys. They're probably going to have to stagger his minutes, you know, compared to both Durant and Harden, who you're going to want to sort of build your rotations around. And that's going to be a tough pill for him to swallow. We'll see how he reacts. I have no idea how he's going to react to that news. You know, I don't think this trade gets done without Kevin Durant's approval, but I definitely think it's possible that this trade gets done without Kyrie Irving's approval, because he's just been, you know, for lack of a better word, unreliable this season, not showing up at media day, allegedly getting caught on a camera at a party, you know, not wearing a mask and doing all those kinds of things, being away from the team and not being in constant communication with Steve Nash and his coach and everything else. So, you know, I think from that standpoint, you've got to reorder your pecking order, and James Harden slots in at number two now. Kevin Durant's going to be your franchise guy, and Kyrie Irving is going to be the one who has to sacrifice here. But I do think they're going to play small a lot. I think you're going to see Jeff Green and KD as kind of the 4-5. You know, they've already been experimenting with that. I think you're going to see even more of that. And, yeah, you're going to turn, you know, these offensive players loose just like they have been all year. I mean, it really has been a very freewheeling offensive style, and I think, you know, Harden knows what he's getting into with Mike D'Antoni being on that bench, and I think he's going to be a natural fit with how they play.
Does this trade happen on January 13th because James Harden was being such a pain, or because Kyrie Irving disappeared and they have no idea when they're seeing him next?
Both. You know, is Brooklyn really willing to part with 4 first-round picks and 4 pick swaps if Kyrie Irving is out there every night and playing as well as he did on Christmas and the opening week? I don't see it. You know, they would say this thing isn't broke. You know, we don't need to fix it. But I think when you're looking at a situation when you've got Kevin Durant in his prime, when he's gotten his hopes up, when he's chasing an MVP, you have to make him feel like he has a chance to compete for a title. And if he's sitting there looking around saying, I don't know where Kyrie Irving is, I support him, but I can't count on him, you know, you're not in the title picture at that point. So I absolutely think that, you know, Kyrie Irving's recent behavior motivated the timing here. And the same thing goes for James Harden. It was only a matter of time until he got traded. As soon as Daryl Morey left, the clock was ticking in Houston on Harden. There was no way he was going to be able to refocus and talk himself back into it. We've seen him, you know, struggle with his positive responses to adversity in the playoffs, you know, multiple times. I was not surprised at all to see him have kind of the same checked out type of response here when the season started. He didn't, you know, he was in a sense stripped of his coach, stripped of his GM, and stripped of his backcourt partner with Russell Westbrook. And all of that happened in a short amount of time. I understand why he was upset, but of course he didn't handle it very well. You know, it's funny, Locke, you know, his first 4 games, he had put up these amazing scoring numbers. And then, you know, his production tailed off here more recently, and he really looked like he was mailing some games in here the last week or so. I kind of thought his first 4 games were maybe like a message to Sean Marks saying, hey, look, man, I'm still the scoring champ. You should consider trading for me. And then his most recent 5 games were kind of a message to Rafael Stone saying, hey, look, just so you're clear, I don't want to be here. Like, get me out of here. Make sure you pull the trigger. And I don't think it's a coincidence at all that, you know, one day after he's calling his teammates out and saying the situation in Houston is unsalvageable, that's the day he gets traded. And you're never going to convince me those things aren't related.
What does this do to James Harden's legacy? What should we think of James Harden? And frankly, what does it do for the league going forward in player empowerment? We'll touch on those things as we continue. We still haven't figured out where Kyrie Irving is or what he's doing, but I don't think we're solving that. Because if we have the brain power to do that, we'll figure out much bigger issues in the world than that. Indiana's a part of this deal. They did something interesting. We'll touch on that as well. And Philadelphia missed out. What does that mean? And I think there's another part of this deal we haven't talked about, and that's the best offensive player in the NBA so far. All of those things are continuing. We're with Ben Golliver, Washington Post national columnist. I'm David Locke. This is Locked On NBA. Have you caught the new show, Locked On Bets? They are on fire, breaking down all of the latest lines for you, usually three or four games a day, quick hitting, 10, 15 minute, really fun show called Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q with handicapper Lee Sterling. And it is all available for you from our sponsors, BetOnline.ag. With all the NFL games this weekend, with the NBA continuing through college basketball, where Lee's been making a killing, you can play all the action at BetOnline.ag. So don't forget to use the promo code Locked On. Receive 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. That's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. You can visit our good friends and exclusive partner online at BetOnline_AG on Twitter to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for your sign up bonus. That's BetOnline.ag. So you just talked about Harden basically forcing his way out. I guess we can have a discussion whether Houston earned that right. But here we have another player signing a max deal, not fulfilling it, ordering their way out of their town. It's a little bit of beating a broken drum about player empowerment, but this one's a pretty massive, like, I'm in control here.
Yeah, you know, I said earlier I thought it was good that the NBA got a jolt. You know, that's me speaking as not someone who's cheering for a particular team or worried about my favorite player kind of pushing his way out. I think if you're the league office or you're the fan of a small market team or an organization that maybe is in a rebuilding cycle, this is a, kind of a scary development because it just reinforces the same playbook that Anthony Davis and Jimmy Butler used here over the last couple of years, where when guys sour on their situation, they now believe, look, I'm so empowered, you know, in this particular player empowerment era that I can get whatever I want. If I raise enough of a ruckus, I will get traded. And in a lot of cases, I'll get traded where I want to be traded. And I think from Houston's standpoint, the silver lining for Rockets fans is they got a really nice return package. They got a lot of stuff, you know, four first round picks, four pick swaps. They got Victor Oladipo back to save a little face. You know, you can say, okay, now we've got two former all-star guards in the backcourt. I mean, you could try to sell that to your fan base, but you know, at least they're not left empty-handed. But absolutely, you know, the precedent that gets set here of those three players I mentioned doing that all before entering kind of the last year of their contract or having significant time left on their deal, especially in the case of Davis and Harden, it just pushes these kinds of questions up, you know, that much more. I mean, Harden had almost two full seasons left on his deal plus a player option when he decided wanted out, and he was able to get out to his preferred destination in a big market and go chase a title. I think you're going to see other superstars say, look, if it worked for Anthony Davis and it worked for James Harden, it's going to work for me too.
Houston gets eight picks. Well, four picks, four pick swaps. The pick swaps only have value the day that they're ever better than Brooklyn. So that doesn't seem really very likely here for a while. Yet Kevin Pelton gives them an A- and gives Brooklyn a D. Does that make sense to you?
Well, look, Kevin Pelton is one of my longest friends in this industry. I texted him today and I said, look, I just hope that every man out there is able to find a woman who loves that man as much as Kevin Pelton loves draft picks, because that guy loves draft picks more than it's the deepest, purest type of love you are ever going to find. I think what his argument's going to be is this can go wrong in a lot of ways for the Brooklyn Nets, right? Like Kevin Durant did not stay in Golden State for very long. Kyrie Irving is a gigantic question mark. James Harden is a free agent in basically 18 months. If that mix changes, or if they look around and say, hey, we don't have enough depth and we don't have enough draft picks, it only takes one of those guys to want out before, you know, that team's not looking as great. And if two of those guys want out, all of a sudden those draft picks could be getting pretty good. I think you throw on top this idea that those picks extend out so far. Guys like KD and Harden are going to be in their mid to late 30s by the time some of those picks convey. They may no longer be capable of carrying great teams. So I think, you're winning some points on the asset battle. But to me, the reason why Raphael Stone's a winner, it's just kind of the big picture direction of your franchise. You don't want somebody who is unhappy like James Harden being the central figure of your entire organization. It has a toxic quality. You saw it come out in the comments from John Wall. You saw it come out in the comments from DeMarcus Cousins. I don't know if the Rockets are good enough to be a playoff team this year without James Harden, but I know they weren't going to make the playoffs with this version of James Harden, and that was going to completely poison whatever they're trying to build with the new coach in Steven Silas and a new GM in Raphael Stone. It was time to just rip off the Band-Aid and go into that rebuilding cycle. This thing had run its course, and so from that standpoint, I view their decision as tough to sell, obviously, because Harden was there and had a lot of success for 8 years, but it was the right move, and I give them a thumbs up. On the Brooklyn side, I still like it for them. I understand all the risks I just laid out, but I think the biggest risk is trying to win this season if Kyrie Irving isn't reliable, and I think plugging in Harden fixes that problem beautifully.
It does. The only thing I'm really worried about, I said earlier, I was like, DeAndre Jordan's just not good anymore. He hasn't been good for a long, long, long time. Like, teams are worse when he's on the floor. He's not a good defensive player anymore. Like, I know people think he is. He's actually not. I don't know that he can play more than 20 minutes a night anymore. Like, I think that's a real, like, I was kind of stunned when Jared Allen was in the deal. I understand they got James Harden. You had to move pieces that had value. But to me, it seemed like all of these pieces, that Jared Allen was actually kind of the piece that was most important. Now, I watched him kick the crap out of Rudy Gobert the other night. So, he played pretty well. And maybe that's a recency bias on my end, but that surprised me. The other one, here's the other one about this. And I mentioned this. Kevin Durant's the best offensive player in the NBA right now. Now, what's interesting about that is it's supposed to be impossible because he's coming off an Achilles tendon. But he's 32 years old, coming off an Achilles tendon, and he's brilliant. He's the most efficient, highest usage rate, best offensive player in the league right now. How long can that last?
Well, look, I've been trying to avoid writing off LeBron for most of his 30s. And, every year you want to talk yourself into, this is the year that he declines. This is the year that he declines. And yet he's right back in the MVP conversation himself this season, even though the Lakers haven't even had to kick into sixth gear. So I think that KD's got an awful lot of good basketball left in him. I really don't want to jinx it because I just want to make sure he gets through this entire season completely healthy because, being there when he tore it, that was just a traumatic experience all around. And it's great to see him play as well as he had. Can I just underscore your point real quick on DeAndre Jordan? Look at what a different player he was without Chris Paul. I think we've seen the impact of Chris Paul in Houston and Oklahoma City and now Phoenix on making his teammates better. We tried to pitch that as like a big three with the Clippers or DeAndre Jordan's a first team All-NBA center. I mean, you look at how some of his teammates regress once he's no longer in their orbit, and it's pretty fascinating. But I think your point's very well taken. It's very possible to me, Locke, that we get to the start of the playoffs, and you could say that Brooklyn has two of the best three offensive players in the league, right? Or at least two of the top five. I mean, I expect Harden to be –
or three of the top five.
Or three of the top five, correct, because Kyrie's been phenomenal himself when he's been on the court. So, I think from that standpoint, it doesn't just have to be the KD show, and I think that's good not only for him kind of spiritually and psychologically. It's good for his body. It's good for their overall strategy. It's going to make them less predictable when you're game planning against them in the playoffs. I think this has a chance to be just an incredible, three-headed monster, knock on wood, that Kyrie decides to join the party.
James Harden has played the most isolation of anyone in the NBA. It's just been his show. Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey decided the math worked on it. Is that because James Harden wanted it or because they thought the math worked on it? And can James Harden play in a different fashion?
Look, I believe that he can come back to Earth, but he does have to prove it because they played so much different from everyone else. And that they had moments where he and Westbrook were able to strike a balance, but kind of in the toughest, most important moments in the playoffs, it just really fell apart. At times Harden disengaged, at times he was just, not fully locked in and not really that aggressive. And it was sort of like, hey, if it's not my show, if I have to kind of make room for Russell Westbrook, that I'm just going to stand back and almost be an observer as we're losing these games. And that's not what you want at all. So I'm hoping that a change of scenery, he will respond to it the right way. Ultimately, he's getting what he wanted. This is where he wanted to go. They were able to make it happen for him. And I think his reputation is on the line here a little bit. He's played with a lot of good players before, and he even showed at times this season that he could work with a, you know, have instant chemistry with a guy like Christian Wood and, you know, make that guy better and help him put up some big stats. So I think from a basketball fit, because all three of those guys are good outside shooters, they're not going to necessarily need to rely on the, you know, slow it down, pound, pound, pound isolation game. I think if they keep the basketball moving, if they're playing with tempo, and if they're just kind of attacking off the dribble and attacking space with those smaller lineups, there's going to be plenty of opportunities for him to get to the basket, get to the free throw line, and get into his step back jumper. So, you know, I'm hoping for the best on that regard, but it's also a challenge for Steve Nash, right? It's an awful lot of talent to fall in his lap in year one. How is he going to be able to manage it? And we've seen he's had trouble connecting with Kyrie Irving already this season. So we can't just give him the benefit of the doubt forever. He is going to face an awful lot of pressure this season.
James Harden is the number one isolation player in the league by a pretty decent amount. DeMar DeRozan second. But you got to understand this about Harden. We talk about this isolation. In the last 2 years, he ran 3,500 isolation attempts. There's only six players in the NBA that ran 1,000 other than Harden.
It's
six.
As many as some teams, right? I mean,
yeah,
pretty close.
There's no player. The second most in the league is 1,700. He ran 3,457. Two times more than the second most. Three times more than all but six other players in the NBA.
I guess my point is, like, he is such a good offensive player, and you could put him in the pick and roll, you could put him in isolation, you could put him in transition, you can make him slow it all the way down. You know, I think it's mostly about avoiding the let's dribble for 20 seconds and have everybody watch, right? If you get him into space and you let him go one-on-one, he's very, very difficult to guard. I think it's more about a pace of play and picking your spots as opposed to grinding everything down and turning your teammates into jump shooters. What you don't want to have happen is KD is just on the right wing as a spacer, watching Harden go to work forever, and maybe he gets a catch and shoot three every once in a while, and maybe he doesn't. That's what can't happen. You've got to keep everybody engaged in the ball moving, and hopefully that's what Steve Nash is stressing, you know, from day one with James Harden.
Has no one to run that pick and roll with, by the way. I just want to point that out, unless you're running with Kevin Durant, which you're just switching, so then they're just going to run isolation. All right, on that little...
Well, run it. Don't you want to see that, though?
Unless they have a big that's rolling the basket, there's no reason for them to run pick and roll. No one's going to follow it, right? So you're just going to go hunt the matchup you want and play one-on-one, which I hope they move the ball more than that, and I hope they play something different than that. It's interesting. I mean, I think Nash wants to play with pace and space, and D'Antoni, we'll see what he does as the assistant coach. One other aspect to that trade we'll touch on. Indiana's involved too. We'll touch on that. COVID's got a big factor, and there were NBA games tonight. So Ben and I will touch on all those things before we wrap up. 34% of Americans made the resolution that they would like to be less stressed. I don't blame them. Well, Headspace is here for you to help. They are your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditation and easy-to-use app. Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever the situation, Headspace can really help you out. I've used meditation a lot personally before going to bed, and I no longer have the 3 a.m. wake up where I like start thinking about everything because I seem to have quieted my mind before I go to bed. I don't know if this stuns you all, but quieting my mind is not the easiest thing for me to do in the whole world. So it's kind of nice when I can reduce a little stress and improve my sleep, boost focus. I've done meditation for a while. I'm in now. Like, I'm one of those 60 million people that are like totally in and kind of wonder why anybody else doesn't do it. Like, it's where I am with like my yoga and meditation. Every time I do it, I'm like, gosh, I've become one of those zealots that wants to tell everyone about it and be really annoying. And I'm trying not to do it here, but I'm telling you that's what I've done. So headspace.com/lockedonNBA for 1 month free. Headspace.com/lockedonNBA. See, make the effort, give it a try. All sorts of things. Things for your kids as well. Best deal offered right now. Headspace.com/lockedonNBA. Today's show is also brought to you by RockAuto.com. That's Ben Golliver's favorite place to get the windshields. Or windshield wipers, the one thing that he can fix on his car. That's a past joke from a last show. Just roll with me and laugh and chuckle a little bit like Ben was nice new. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers for over 20 years. RockAuto.com, you can shop auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, if you're a pro, if you need something as simple as mats or windshield wipers, or maybe you need the big stuff, you can go to their really unique, simple, remarkably easy to navigate old school catalog, which has all the parts available for your vehicle. You choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer, and you're in great shape. Not different prices based on whether you're a do-it-yourselfer or not, and not only the things that are in the brick-and-mortar store. So go grab all those things at rockauto.com. When you check out, make sure you write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us section so you can know who sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Josh Lloyd gave a whole breakdown on this trade. Make sure you go grab that if you're a fantasy player. And have that as well. Here's the one thing really interesting to me on this. Last note on Harden. The two teams wanting to trade for him were Philadelphia and Brooklyn. Mike D'Antoni is in Brooklyn and spent more time with him than anyone. And Daryl Morey's in Philadelphia spent more time with him than anyone. So we can say all these things about him and different feelings and all that kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is the two guys who spend the most time with him wanted him.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, sometimes talent trumps everything else, right? Whether it's personality, whether it's, playoff shortcomings, whether it's, reputational factors about getting along with teammates and chemistry questions and all that. I think that, he is basically certified as one of the most talented players in NBA history by a consensus of everyone who watches and studies the game. And especially, among people within the league as well, right? So, I go back to what I said earlier about KD giving the thumbs up, right? I mean, he could easily scuttle this trade if he wanted to. And I think that says a lot that he didn't, that he was, willing to kind of, give his approval to a massive package going out to get James Harden back. There's a lot of belief there and a lot of trust and a lot of shared history dating back to Oklahoma City.
All right, Indiana's the quiet team no one's talking about here. We may, in like 3 months, we may all be talking about it. They're 7-4. They're pretty good. They're new. We talked about them a lot last week. Their new coach has kind of changed them. Malcolm Brogdon's having an MVP quality year right now. They got Caris LeVert for Victor Oladipo. Did they get better?
I think it's similar for this season. I think that it's almost like Caris LeVert is your TJ Warren replacement, right? I don't think he's going to give you everything that Victor Oladipo can do, but he's that pure scorer. And, Warren goes down with the injury, so that's just a nice piece to have. I look at this more as a bigger picture, long-term move for the Pacers, where it seemed like Oladipo wasn't entirely thrilled to be there. They passed on the opportunity to sign him to an extension. He's going to be one of the bigger names available next summer's free agency market. You didn't want to lose him for nothing. And to be able to get a really good scorer, a quality player with some playoff experience in Caris LeVert, who's still relatively early in his career, and he's under control from the contract standpoint for this year and two more, that's a great deal for a Victor Oladipo. I mean, Caris LeVert's value to the Pacers over the next 3 years is significantly higher than Victor Oladipo's value to the Pacers because he just wasn't going to be there almost no matter what past the season. So I really like this move from the Pacers standpoint. And I kind of wonder, I mean, this could backfire on Houston for sure. I mean, we could wind up looking back at this trade and saying, look, they did an amazing job with the draft picks, but they traded away the best player in James Harden, and they maybe even traded away the second best player by not keeping Caris LeVert.
Oladipo is interesting because he was so rocky coming back from that injury last year, and so it's hard to tell who he is. They've been much better on the floor with him offensively, but they've been awful when he's on the floor defensively so far this year. 8 points better per 100 possessions when he's off the floor defensively. I wonder if he might be interesting to see what he may have really lost something due to that injury. Because he used to be, just make sure everyone understands, like 16, 17, 17, 18 years, he was probably the most impactful plus-minus defensive player in the NBA, or one of the four or five. I mean, they had to have, when he was in Oklahoma City and Indiana, that was what he did. For him to be that far the other way makes me a little worried about where he is physically.
For sure. His first year in Indiana was an unreal two-way season. I mean, the advanced stats bore it out. Every single stat he just aced, and it was a lot because of his athleticism, and I still am not completely convinced he's got his pop back on offense either. So, that's definitely something to track. I'm also curious, like, if you're Houston, I mean, maybe you're going into this with the idea of like, it's going to be a teardown. Maybe you're doing a fire sale. Maybe you're looking and saying some of these other veteran pieces now you've got on hand, you could try to turn around and flip by the deadline. That's another option here as well. So that's something else to keep an eye on from their motivation, their standpoint. But, you know, it's also possible they say, well, now we've got John Wall, Victor Oladipo, and Christian Wood, you know, throw in a couple other vets. Maybe that's a team that can try to make a run at the eighth seed, you know, and give Steven Salas a chance. We'll have to see how that one shakes out. I could see that one going either way. Personally, if I was in charge, I would tear it down. I would go full rebuild and see what you can do in the draft.
All right, let's run through some of the action of the night that was not canceled by COVID. Dallas beat Charlotte tonight 104-93. I thought this was really interesting because this is a game that Dallas won their new way. Their offensive rating last year was the number one offensive rating in the NBA. It is not this year. They're like 19th offensively or something like that. They were 104.5 offensively tonight, which is not good. They were a 94 defensively. I know Charlotte's not an offensive juggernaut. I mean, when you start Bismack Biyombo, you are not an offensive juggernaut. But I don't know that Dallas could have held much of anyone to a 94 defensive rating last year. This to me is a sign of a different Dallas Maverick team.
How much credit do you give Porzingis being back in the lineup and filling some, you know, a fairly good number of minutes for them? I mean, I think at times early this season they struggled on defense, and it could have just been, hey, we're easing into the season. Luke is getting himself back into shape. So maybe that's how you explain just some of the up and downs early defensively. But I think Porzingis, just given their depth chart, is just a central defensive piece they've kind of got to have on the court if they're going to be defending at that kind of level.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have Richardson right now, but boy, are they big, right? Porzingis, Willie Cauley-Stein, Luka, Wandu started, and Hardaway Jr. Like, that is a big, big team. James Johnson came off the bench. Boban played 15 minutes. Like, Trey Burke, yeah, Trey Burke looked like everybody's little like, five-year-old son out there at 6 feet tall with all those monsters. So, you know, they're just super big and super long, and I think they're just a different team than they were a year ago. I don't know yet whether they're better or not. They're just very different. I think you have to kind of recognize that. Milwaukee beat Detroit, unsurprisingly.
Hey, yeah, Locke, go ahead. Locke, real quick on that. Sorry, one final footnote. Luka's stepping it up on defense. You know, I mean, I think this season he's been better than he has been in previous seasons. I think that he got the knock as a really bad defender early in his career. Kind of people did the James Harden comparison. I think, you know, Harden proved that he could actually be a functional defender, you know, at times as his career played out. Luka's taking a step forward there. Give him some credit too.
Good point. Brooklyn beat New York tonight. Kevin Durant continues 26 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. Despite being shorthanded, they beat the Knicks. Knicks have kind of fallen on a little bit tough times after looking good for a while. Memphis beat Minnesota. Karl-Anthony Towns did play, so that's a tough one for Minnesota. Jonas Valanciunas had 24. Cat had 25. Beasley had 28. Minnesota just can't get enough stops to stop anyone. Memphis's offensive rating in this game, and Memphis can't really score, was a 118. Like, it's crazy. Minnesota's going to set a record, like, is the worst defensive team ever in the history of the NBA if they're not careful.
It's wild. Is Taylor Jenkins, like, the best coach nobody talks about?
Yeah, he's really good. Yes. Yes, because that
shouldn't this team have already fallen apart this season?
Yes,
I mean, everybody who's good on their team seemed like they were injured, and they're still gutting out these victories. I mean, they're missing both Ja and Jaren. The list goes on from there. I think he's really good. I think that he probably got overshadowed by Ja's rookie season last year in terms of them being a surprise team. He might be like just one of those coaches where he, you know, it's sort of like Jaeger in Sacramento, where, you know, Sacramento had some of its best seasons and he wasn't really getting a lot of credit. Kind of a similar deal there in Memphis.
And Flip Saunders' son has won about 33% of the games he's coached in his career. So that was a good one for Taylor. Sorry, that probably wasn't fair to Ryan. Lakers are awesome. Should we just stop there on that one? 128-90. I mean, they're 128-99. The only thing that's really interesting to me is that Anthony Davis the other day kind of went off after a prep. Like, after a game in his Zoom session, kind of strangely, how mad he was about how bad they were. And it's as though he suddenly has taken this leadership role on this team of like, okay, fine, LeBron, some other people want to coast. Like, we're not coasting. We were terrible. We're getting better. And they've been great since he went off. They've won all 7 of their road games, by the way, they've played.
I think that they are just the most talented and at this point, most cohesive and, you know, best chemistry team in the league. Like, you know, I'm looking for ways to kind of knock them. And right now there aren't too many ways to do it. They've been sensational. I actually thought he was protesting a little bit too much. You know, I think that they were coasting prior to his comments, which is probably what was driving him crazy. But You know, maybe he's just trying to keep himself engaged and, you know, trying to push a little buttons and set a standard for some of the new players, you know, in terms of guys like Wesley Matthews and Schroeder, understanding what the expectations are defensively. But they're looking awesome. You know, I watching them compared to the Clippers, I mean, I think that there's a clear gap between those two teams. And then from there, you know, in the Western Conference, I'm not sure who's really threatening them. So that's one reason why I like the James Harden trade. Let's mix it up. Let's try to get some more teams that can kind of, you know, throw a scare at these L.A. Lakers.
I do love the Clippers. They won tonight over New Orleans, 111-106. New Orleans was pretty shorthanded. Nickeil Alexander-Walker, who's willing to shoot when asked, came in, played 33 minutes, took 23 shots, scored 37 points for the various Bledsoe ball guards that were not available for the Pelicans. And the final one of the night, Portland beats Sacramento 132-126. They outscore Sacramento 32-21 in the fourth quarter. The Luke Walton watch is on, right?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, they've turned in a number of just really just kind of demoralizing flat performances. Now, there was an exception. They had a pretty dramatic win the other night against Indiana, of all teams. But I think it's been on for a little bit. You know, they just – do they have an identity, right? Are they playing hard and together? Now, these are tough questions to ask in a season like this, but, you know, it's been something that's been kind of looming there. I think the other story from Portland's side, Locke, is, I mean, C.J. McCollum playing some of the absolute best basketball of his career, does it again with a huge night tonight. Damian Lillard probably gets the headline with 40, but C.J. has 28, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, and just one turnover. I mean, he's been rock solid, kind of in that all-star mix so far this season.
All right, I'm going to leave us with this. We gave you all the analysis. We're full of it. The only people you should really listen to are people who have money on the line. So, betonline.ag, Atlantic Division, New Brooklyn Nets went from plus 125 to minus 150. Eastern Conference, they went from plus 275, which I think means if you bet 100, you get 275, to 135. Woo! And Championship, they went from 650 to 275. So I would tell you the odds makers at betonline.ag certainly think that Brooklyn got more than a D for this trade.
Boy, just tons of shots at Kevin Pelton today, Locke. Come on now.
It's like my best friend in the whole league. I mean, if I can't take shots at him, what's the point of actually doing a show? You know how far back he and I go, right?
Oh, of course, of course. The Seattle days.
Yeah, he was my stats guy when he was like an 18-year-old kid.
I used to love it when you'd come to the Moda Center, I guess even back in the day when it was the Rose Garden, and he would be helping you out on the radio call back in the good old days.
There you go. That's when we actually did this thing called traveling to games. It's a really wild concept. On that note, he's Ben Golliver. Read him in the Washington Post. Go to his Twitter handle, at Ben Golliver, and grab his weekly newsletter. I'm David Locke. Lots to be talked about. You know where you're going now. Locked on Rockets. Locked on Nets and Locked on Pacers, the local experts on the biggest stories, the Locked on Podcast Network.